I decided to pack up everything I owned. It would all fit in my little Subaru, and I drove across the country, and I did that whole thing of trying to make it in Hollywood. So another thing that I've seen out here is that the people who do well tend to not think of it as a hobby. To me, it's all about just putting in that work, doing the preparation. I was sitting in a restaurant in Serbia, and there was this song that was playing, and I was like, what is this? This is amazing. It was a song called Dimitrios Sine Mitre. Yeah. So for me, it's been very grounding to go there and sort of, you know, be reminded of how simple it can be to have a nice life and a nice time with the people who care about you and who you care about. Get in the dojo, start doing the work, the exercises, the training, so that when you do get that opportunity, when you do get that bite at the apple, that you are prepared.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. Our mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, but let's do it together. Help me by being the best version of yourself and truly do something with your life. As a guy with Macedonian heritage, I'm totally in love with our culture, food, and of course the music. A couple of months ago, my parents sent me a clip with an American singing a Macedonian song. That made me so happy that a person from a completely different culture could embrace mine. I decided that I would do anything I can to bring him on my show. Little did I know that he had a life outside of Balkan music and was actually a successful writer for children's television and an Emmy winner. I'm super excited for today's episode with Ron Holsey. Yeah, welcome, Ron.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that you're here. And like, I've been listening to your songs and just enjoying it. And last night I cooked food, I had some wine, and I just kind of got a little tipsy and enjoyed the Serbian and Macedonian music. It just makes you so happy, right?
It does. It makes you want to drink rakia.
Yeah.
Which, if people are listening, don't know what that is. Yeah. It's like a fruit brandy that they make in the Balkans, and it's really powerful stuff.
It's dangerous. Yeah.
It's really dangerous. Yeah.
Yep. We've all been there. We're going to talk more about that. But when did you come to LA? How many years ago?
That was the end of 2004. So
almost 15 years ago.
Yeah, you remind me. Yeah, it's been a while.
And do you remember, like, if we go back to when you're in that car driving cross country and like you're going to come to, do you remember like what was your mind at that point? What were you thinking? How was LA going to be, you know?
You know what? It was like I had very practical considerations. Like, I knew that I had a place to stay for at least one night. Like, I had enough money to get me there. I had a place to crash for a night. And then, like, the next night, I'll figure it out. But luckily, it ended up working out that I was able to stay. So my friend was living in this house sharing with other people. And they all decided it was cool if I stayed there. So we all kind of stayed and pitched in. So I ended up staying there for a couple years, actually. Yeah. So that worked out really well. But for me, it was an exciting time, but you know, you're also wondering. It's such an unknown thing. Whenever you're in a business like entertainment, there's no clear set path for you. Yeah. And being an entrepreneur, I'm sure you can relate. But you know, it's one thing to like get a job and you're going to work your way up the corporate ladder. It's a clear path ahead. But when you are trying to navigate a place like Hollywood, you just have to sort of make your way through the woods. You don't know what the next day is going to bring. And even today, even though I've had a lot of success in the business, it's still, you know, I don't know what I'll be doing at the end of this year necessarily. Yeah. But that's what kind of keeps it fun and fresh and interesting. If you have the stomach for it, for the uncertainty, then it can be a good thing.
Yeah, I bet. And I mean, how did you, like, did you ever think about quitting? Like, did you ever have that moment, like, shit, I'm done with this? And, like, how was your thought process? What made you keep going, you know, at those? If you want to share, I don't know if you have a moment when you're like, oh, shit, I'm done with this.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I mean, I've thought about quitting relatively recently just because, you get frustrated. You know, there's projects that I've worked on that have had, that have been rocky, really, really rocky. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, the stress of this, it's not enjoyable. I just, you know, why am I doing this? You know, yeah. You have to keep reminding yourself why you're doing it. And if you don't have an answer to that, maybe it is time to quit. And there's nothing wrong with quitting or changing your focus on that, you know, front. But in terms of along the way, I don't think I ever really thought about quitting in terms of, this is too hard, I'm going to quit. No, I don't think so. I think I'd still be taking a bite at that apple today. But then sometimes once you do something and you've conquered that mountain, you say, okay, I've done this. Maybe it's time for another challenge. I guess that's not exactly the same as quitting, but sometimes I think about that even today.
And I mean, you won an Emmy last year, right?
Yes. Yeah. That was pretty wild.
That's pretty fucking cool. But it's 15 years in the making, basically, right? Because you've been in this business for a long time. And it's funny when people talk about like overnight successes. You know? How to win an Emmy, does that change your perspective on things? Does it get easier because of that? Or,
you know, it's funny. People ask me, oh, you know, you got this Emmy and does that change things? Does it open more doors? But honestly, to me, it's kind of the opposite. It's more like a result of what's already been happening.
Yeah.
So there was, things were going really, really well for me in a lot of different ways. And I think the Emmy sort of came out of that. And, you know, I happened to be working on a really, really great show with a great team of people working on Sesame Street, which is such an icon. And so it's just sort of like it was a natural outgrowth of that. But no, the Emmy didn't really change anything. Yeah. On top of that, it's nice. It's really cool to have. It was a really nice moment. But like you said, there was just so much more work behind that that, you know, you don't hear about, you don't find out about.
Yeah. I mean, like, what do you want to say to, like, people that are listening at home now and they might have a dream about coming to Hollywood or become an athlete and stuff like that, but they don't know, like, they're a little bit afraid of taking that leap of faith. What do you want to say to those people, you know?
Well, I think that, you know, you have to do the preparation at first. Another thing that I've seen out here is that the people who do well tend to not think of it as a hobby that they're just going to kind of jump into and think it's easy. Yeah. Like a lot of the actors, even they've studied for years and years and years and are very disciplined people, the ones who really succeed. Yeah. And the same for being a writer, you kind of, if you haven't been doing it for a number of years and working either on writing your own short plays or trying to write your own feature film or things like that, then, you know, you got to do that prep first. Yeah. And then once that's solid, then you should feel confident in trying to put yourself out there. There's no reason not to. I mean, what does it hurt to try?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think the fear of failure is holding a lot of people back. And I know, like you talked about, you like when you kind of like fail, quote unquote, because it makes you want to prove them wrong. Like, where does that come from? Do you remember, is that from early life, or do you remember why it's so important to you? Like, you get that like extra fire when it doesn't go exactly as you want to?
Yeah, where does that come from? I'm not exactly sure, but it's definitely something that's a trait of mine. Of I'm kind of maybe stubborn in a way, like, If I try to do something, I want to get it right and I want to do it well.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure where that comes from. Maybe it's from my grandfather always had that mentality.
Yeah.
You know.
Stubborn grandfather?
Yeah. But he was like, you know, what would he say? He had this little rhyme. He said, like, if there's a task that must be done, never quit until it's done. Be the labor great or small, do it well or not at all. So I try to approach everything that way.
That's cool. And that's so interesting with life, how like things that we are instilled like so young that they stick with us, right? And they want to make us do things in a certain way. And I think that could be good if you have good role models, like it seems like you had. Mm-hmm. But for there's people listening here that sometimes don't have like good role models in their life. How can they kind of change their perception of like what's right and wrong, you know?
Yeah. Gosh, it's really good. That's a really good question. I think to me, it's all about just putting in that work, doing the preparation. You know, if you're sitting at home and you want to be a screenwriter, watch every YouTube video that you can about writing, and do everything you can to try and prepare. Yeah. And it's funny because that's kind of the mentality I used when I approached the Balkan music that we're going to talk about. And that was another instance where somebody, kind of my friends in Serbia, kind of jokingly said, you know, I don't think you can do this. And I said, okay, we'll see about that, you know. And I really tried really hard to try and learn how to sing Balkan style.
And we're going to talk about that because I think that's so cool, because we're looking at, like, I'm sitting here with a guy that's like, you've done the deeds, you know, you put the work in and you accomplish something, and then you find this new thing in your life that you probably didn't even know about, right? And that's so exciting to me that we can start falling in love with things that we don't even know exist. So can we just talk about, like, was it your first trip to Serbia? Were you like, why did you even decide to go to Serbia? Or like, how did this start in your life?
Yeah, that was really interesting. So I got the travel bug probably about 10 years ago. And I decided to start trying to go places that were a little bit off the beaten path. And so at the time, this was like spring of 2010, I just finished a really stressful job on a kids' TV show, and I said, I got to get out of here. I got to go take a month, and I'm going to go to Eastern Europe, you know, behind the Iron Curtain, and somewhere no one's going to find me, and I'll just, you know, eat borscht and you know, sit in taverns and stuff like this. And so I had a few places that I was thinking about going. I was going to go to the Baltics, maybe, like Tallinn, Estonia, or Riga, Latvia, or Warsaw, Poland. And I was telling my some of my sailing friends. I do competitive sailing. And one of them happens to be from Serbia. Mm. And she and her husband said, what? Forget those places. You got to go to Belgrade.
Yeah.
And I just kind of looked at them like, really? Come on, guys. You're pulling my leg. Belgrade, Serbia. I mean, really? That just doesn't sound very nice at all.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, it's really cool. It's really cool. And I was like, all right, sure. I'll think about it. And Natasha said, and by the way, if you do go, you know, I can hook you up, help you with find an apartment, everything taken care of. So I said, okay. So I went to work. And I actually worked with a Serbian guy.
Oh.
He happened to be on the same show as me. And I said, hey, man, my friends are telling me that I should go to Belgrade. What do you think? He's like, oh, yeah, Belgrade's awesome. So I said, okay, that's two people told me that. And then I happened to know another Serbian girl who I went to college with. And I asked her, and they all said, it's great. And I did a little Googling, and I said, okay, well, that's okay. I'll just try it out. Let's see what happens. And then within 48 hours after landing there, I was like, this place is awesome. You know, it was just so different than I had anticipated. Yeah. I had this image in my head of it being like a sort of Stalinist kind of place, maybe like in Poland, but it really wasn't at all. And I learned a little bit about the history, that it was not actually behind the Iron Curtain, and Yugoslavia was a different situation. And I just loved how warm the people were. I loved the culture. It had this mix of Mediterranean, but also kind of Eastern European, and also a little bit of the Turkish flavor, and it was just such this interesting crossroads. And so I just really, really liked the place, and it was beautiful. And so I decided to go back. I spent a month there. And then I came back that winter, and then I came back again the next year. And it was, I think, on that trip where they were, I was talking to some friends, and they were telling, it was actually on the first trip that I heard the term turbo folk. Yeah. Which I had no idea was what it was.
How do you even explain that in English? Like,
how do you explain it? It's like bulk. It's like this, like it's like pop music, yeah. Like 80s and 90s pop music that has a Balkan influence.
It's really good.
It's really good. Well, that's the some people think it's really good.
YouTube that shit.
Yeah, you'll see some crazy stuff, yeah. But. I had no idea what they were talking about, and so they said it's this kind of music that's our domestic music, and you sing like you do this thing with your voice, and I was like, really, it sounds like Arabic or something. And so anyway, I kind of got into it, and I started, yeah. I was like, oh, this stuff has a good beat, it's cool, yeah. It's different, and I started going out to the clubs in Belgrade, and it was a couple trips later where someone jokingly said, because they knew I sang because of my background. They jokingly said, "Ron, you should be a turbo folk singer." And I said, I was kind of joking. So then I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to be a turbo folk singer." And so then I started like kind of learning some of the songs, and I was like, "Oh, how do you sing like this?" And I kind of started getting more interested in it. And then people told me, "Oh, well, forget this turbo folk stuff. You got to go back to." The classics, and so they started playing like Šaban Šaulić and Tomas Ravković for me. Yeah. I said, "Oh, this stuff is really good." The old tavern music, yeah. And started learning that, and then like went even farther back to like Macedonian ethno music, yeah. And I kind of went backwards in time to like the root of it, and I was interested in seeing if I could learn how to sing this stuff, yeah. And so I came back to LA. And I said, "Well, this is hard. I need to find someone to teach me how do you sing this way?" Yeah. And I asked around a little bit, and someone put me in touch with this girl who sang like Israeli music, and then she put me in touch with a woman who teaches at UCLA, mm-hmm. named Tsvetanka Varimezova, mm-hmm. who is a Bulgarian singer, oh. And ethno singer. She's really, really fantastic. And I called her up, and she said, "Sure, I'll give you coaching lessons at UCLA." So I would go to UCLA like once a week, and we would work on this song, "Do tako sam dno života" by Tomas Ravković.
Great song.
It's the translation is "I'm at the bottom of life."
Yeah. And the funny thing is like with these like Balkan music, Serbian and Macedonian song, is like. They're so depressing that you get happy in a way, you know, because right. you just want to drink and like hug your friends and like, it's so much emotions, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I kind of related to it because it's kind of like the blues in a way, like American yeah. blues music. It's sad, but there's some joyfulness in it, and you just, yeah.
I always get this picture, good. Like, where you have, like, this rakia or wine, and you have a gun, and you have this music, and you don't know what to do with your life, but in a way, it always usually turns out positive, but it's, like, so much, like, energy and motion.
Totally. It. Oh, yeah. There's this one YouTube video of Silvana singing Štat će mi život. Yeah. In the tavern, the old black and white. Oh man, it's so good. So I after I was ready, I did the prep. I worked for weeks and weeks on learning that. I learned the words first, and I would write the words out by my hand, you know, several times, and just try to absorb it, and then you know added the music to that, and then finally when I felt I was ready, I recorded it with. A buddy of mine who I met who plays in a Bulgarian funk band here in LA.
Awesome.
called Orkestar Meze. And his name is Yunus, and his parents are Turkish, so he had, you know, some relationship to the music. Yeah. And we recorded the song in my apartment. I was like, "Oh, this is fun." I sent it to my friends. I was like, "Hey, what do you think? Hey, I sang a Serbian song." Thought that would be kind of the end of it.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, it was like viral. And 400,000 views, and I was getting calls from Serbian newspapers asking for interviews. And I was like, what? It must be a slow news day in Serbia. But it turns out that not a lot of people sing Tomas Ravković songs, let alone Americans. Yeah. And so it was kind of interesting for people that there was this American who really, you know, fell in love with Balkan music.
It's so rare to embrace. Yeah. The Balkan people, we're all over the world, right? We've been traveling all over. We always immigrated and we love our culture. So, for example, in Sweden, where I'm from, like there's so many people from Serbia, Bosnia, Macedonia. We have all these parties. We bring in all those, the most famous singers. There's this crazy parties and it's always a lot of drinking, a lot of fun, and there's always some fight that goes on. Like it's a lot of emotion, not always good, but like we are in love with our own culture, but it's not always other people that are in love with our culture. They like it, but not as much. So they learn a song.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. Yes. No, I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And I think people, you know, responded, they said, you know, I really, connected with the song, which is true, and I think a lot of that was the preparation. You know, yeah. I loved the song to begin with, but then I really took the time to really learn it well, yeah. I think, and to really sort of try and do it the best I could.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I did a few more, and I've kept going, and then I did the Macedonian song with Tijana Dapčević, who's a big star over in the Balkans.
How did that collaboration like?
That was another like serendipity thing. We have some mutual friends, Tijana and I, and we were over at their place, and we were talking about music, and I happened to be learning Jovana Jovanke, and she asked me, "Let me hear a little bit," and I was so intimidated. I was like, "Oh God," you know.
Oh, shit.
So I started, you know, singing, Jovana Jovanke.
We're actually going to play this song in the podcast. So.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I started singing it, and she started singing along with me.
Yeah.
And we sing it together, and everyone was like, stop doing what they're doing. And I was like, that sounded really good. And so we decided, it's like, well, what if we record it?
Yeah.
And so we called up a friend, a mutual friend, who... Goran Kovacic, who played guitar, did the guitar arrangement, which was a beautiful arrangement, and we recorded it, boom boom, like that, yeah. And then, you know, did the little video, and Tony Pavlovsky, who's a Macedonian guy who lives in Belgrade, did the videography, and he's really wonderful, and that turned out really nice, I thought.
Yeah, it's so nice. I mean, and the last question that I want to ask you, Ron, because you're, as you said, you've done so much in your life and you accomplished a lot of things and you're super humble about it and super chill. And I love that. The people that are listening now, if they want to get started on their dream right after this, what do you think is the first step to get a little bit closer to what they want?
Get in the dojo.
Yeah.
And you're a karate guy.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of it is just doing that training, that preparation. Yeah. Like you said, I think about, for some reason, just popped into my head, the Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper duet they did at the Oscars.
Yeah.
You know, for 5 minutes, you know, it's this amazing performance, but there's hours and hours and hours and hours of prep on both of their sides throughout their entire lives that led to that moment, that 1 5 minutes. So I'd say get in the dojo, start doing the work, the exercises, the training, so that when you do get that opportunity, when you do get that bite at the apple, that you are prepared. That's what I would say is the number one thing.
I love that. And I think it's the truth. If we look at like this is... episode 119 now. So I met a lot of successful people and we all want to be doing that duet, you know. I would love to be Bradley Cooper in that moment, right? But in order to get there, we got to do the work, right?
Yeah.
Just like you. I mean, who don't want to have an Emmy at home, you know? Who doesn't want to have that? Everybody wants it, but how many people have the courage to like drive cross country, live on a freaking air mattress for 6 months or even years maybe and then do it over and over again. This is like 15 years in the making. So if you're willing to do that with the passion that you have, you can also like reap the rewards. And maybe if you have a tough day or something, go in and listen to some Balkan music and have a rakia and relax a little bit. Yeah,
we should add a playlist to this podcast.
Yeah, let's do that.
So look at the link below. We'll have a little playlist of like sad Balkan songs to listen to while you make dinner and drink rakia.
That's awesome. We'll do that, and we'll have some of Ron's favorite songs that you can also check out. And yeah, let's just end this podcast with the song Jovano Jovanke. Here that Ron sang together with Tiana, and it's just an amazing song. We're also going to link to the YouTube video that I really would like for you to see, and just imagine for a while that Ron didn't know anything about this language a couple of years back, but he decided to do it. He fell in love with the culture, and it's interesting to do things that you learn from. So be open to learn, and be open that you might meet a person from a different culture that you never ever thought would be interesting, or you may have this feeling that this is not for me, I don't like those people. Be open, because it's not... we're all humans, and the world is a beautiful place, and I think we should try to embrace that more. So thank you everybody for listening and for doing this and taking your life serious enough to say, I'm gonna go after my dreams and I'm gonna do it. And I'm here helping you. If you want more tools to get to where you want, check out ilovesuccess.co. Have a couple of free chapters of the goal book, which is my book about goal settings. I have a copy here that I'm going to give to Ron here. And also there's so many different interviews, conversations, and tools for you to get a little bit closer. And that's it. If you like what we do, if you're on the mission, share this podcast with someone that you care about, that you want to get a little bit closer. And yeah, thank you so much. And thank you, Ron, for doing this.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Yeah. Take care. Time.
Donuts!